This podcast is brought to you by the Albany Public Library Main Branch and the generosity of listeners like you.
What is a podcast?
God, Daddy, these people talk as much as you do. Razib Khan's Unsupervised Learning.
You know that genetics plays a huge role in our health, and more people are using genetic testing to determine risk for diseases like cancer for themselves and their kids than ever before. So I want to tell you about ORCID. It's the only company that does whole genome testing for embryos, testing before your child is born. If you're doing IVF, this is a clear choice now, because now you can reduce risk for thousands of single gene disorders, including heritable forms of autism, pediatric cancers, and birth defects. Check them out at ORCIDHealth.com.
Hey, everybody. This is Razib with the Unsupervised Learning Podcast. And I don't do this very often. I'm going to do it again. I did it recently. a month ago. I am asking everyone who is listening to this podcast and enjoys it, especially if you are not a paid subscriber to Unsupervised Learning, my Substack, please review and rate well this podcast, because it gets more visibility that way, and it can be recommended in other people's feeds and, you know, other similar podcasts and whatnot. I know it might take you a minute, but I think that's, you know, a good payback for the content here, especially if you are a listener to one of the free options, of which there are many. And, you know, if you're subscribe to Spotify or Apple Podcasts, you can also find it on YouTube, and then various other platforms. So it's just not one place. You can find it on Libsyn as well, which is where the free version is hosted. So with that logistical issue out of the way, I want to introduce our guest today, my friend, Dr. Colin Wright. Colin is a fellow at the Manhattan Institute, and he is also the author of Reality's Last Stand, which is a Substack on this platform. Substack, this is where the podcast is first posted, if you are on the free feed. And I also like to take some credit for Colin being on Substack, because I did prod him, and now he is one of the top science Substacks. Like me, Colin, you know, I mean, it's like we're up there. So I don't know. I'm proud to have him on the platform, and we're friends. We've known each other for about 6 years now. I will start out really quickly by introducing how I introduced myself to Colin, which Colin knows the story. He wrote a piece, I think it was fall of 2018. Was that right? Fall of 2018?
Yep.
For Quillette on sex and gender and how sex is real. And I dropped into his DMs on Twitter, and he didn't have very many followers back then. I dropped into his DMs and I said, "Your life is changing." And he's like, "I don't know what you're talking about." And I was like, "You will." And I was right, wasn't I, Colin?
You were right on. I still had this hope that if I just calmly explain to people like why I disagree with them, then everything will just be fine. That's what scientists do. Nope.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, Colin is trained as an evolutionary ecologist. Is that what can I say that? Behavioral ecologist.
Yeah.
It's behavioral ecologist.
Most accurate, yeah.
Yeah, you have your PhD. Is it from Santa Barbara?
Yep, UC Santa Barbara.
Yeah, and you are from California. I have been to your beautiful childhood home. I hope your parents are doing well.
They're doing good.
Breaking the fourth wall or whatever, Colin and I are friends, but if anyone has any cursory knowledge of my social media or anything like that, I think you will know that, so I don't want to pretend like, you're just another person on this podcast, part of the content machine that is Unsupervised Learning. you started out as an academic, basically, at least within the last decade. And in fact, like, we overlapped at UC Davis for, I think, a year. You were an undergrad and I was a grad student, but we didn't know each other, so it was my first year, I think, in grad school, and it was your last year as an undergrad there. You have this academic path all lined out, and then obviously, things changed, and we're going to talk about that. But the first thing I want to ask you about is, your former PhD advisor, the last time we talked, you couldn't talk too much about it. It was still really fresh and in the news, although, it's not a super interesting tale of academic. Well, I think I can say fraud. I don't think it's alleged anymore. I think he's been, basically found to have engaged in academic fraud, manufacturing data and fabrication. He still claims that there are errors and mistakes. I actually read his apology recently because he's taken a turn into a new line of work. And I just think this is a very, very amusing fact or datum to enter into the record as we go into, the gender wars and all these other things you're involved in. So what's Dr. Pruitt doing now?
It's not completely clear. He was doing some teaching, I think, at a high school somewhere in Florida. He's since been writing a series. I think it's like a multi-volume series of fantasy novels. I don't know the exact story, but there's a lot of sort of politics involved. It's set in like sort of a medieval time, but there's like a lot of magic going along. There's giant magical cats in this world. There's backstabbing. The reviews actually look pretty decent, but that's because he's has a career of writing good fiction in in science and now in science fiction, which was his genre all along.
Well, so I'm going to say, so he has been alleged, and now it seems to be whatever. The authorities have come down and concluded that he did engage in data fabrication, but he was still your PhD, or he was your PhD advisor, right?
Yeah, he was my PhD advisor. We had no inkling this was going on while we were there. One of the papers that this occurred on was, on data that, he had this policy where if you're a new graduate student in his lab, he had all this backlog of data that he collected, or he said that he collected while he was a postdoc, just data. He was in the field just doing stuff. And then he would give this data to new incoming graduate students so they could write sort of first paper, get their feet wet, writing a real paper, right when they had joined the lab. And so we analyze it, write it up, and we get first author on the paper. Just good practice, because that's what scientists do. You analyze data, you write papers. And so this paper, this data that he handed me like 2 weeks, after I'd freshed into his graduate program, this was probably in 2013, turns out this data was completely fabricated. We looked back on the data after other patterns came out, and it was just, okay, yeah, this is clearly done. There's a lot of cut and pasted things. There's no biological explanation or methodological explanation for these things. And unfortunately, that was a paper, that was my first paper ever, and that was in PNAS. It was a huge paper that is currently, we tried to retract it as soon as all this stuff came out. But he kind of lawyered up and threw the wrenches into all the gears of the process of things getting retracted. So now that the investigation finally came out and concluded that, yes, indeed, that there was fraud committed, we're now moving forward with this retraction. But, this is used by, my enemies online is, they'll just throw these out like, oh, look at all these retractions. Like, what's Swipe Right doing? This is just stuff that my advisor did, and no data that I've ever collected or any of the colleagues that have collected have been shown to have these similar anomalies. So yeah, we're glad that he's finally sort of been brought to justice on this whole thing.
Yeah. I was asking you about that because, and I did, what was his first name again?
Jonathan.
Yeah. I have met Jonathan. I remember meeting him once at UC Davis. I think he was there as a postdoc, maybe, while we were there.
I think, yeah, I overlapped with him too, at least a year.
That was that year. He was postdoc, and I think he might have been the PopBio postdoc that year. The group itself has a joint postdoc. I think he might have been that year, and I was at some dinner. Or lunch, and he interrupted the conversation and said hi real quick, and he was very energetic, very fast talking guy. Do you think, despite all of his data fabrication, did you learn some science from him? Did you get skills? Was this kind of a situation where he wasn't a total fraud, but he added some fraud into the sausage, so to speak?
Yeah, that's a good question, because honestly, you know, there's not every advisor is perfect and everything like that, and there are things he could have definitely improved upon. But overall, I think he's like a legitimate genius and a creative person. Like, that was the most baffling part about this entire fraud investigation and conclusion, was that he was brilliant enough where he could have been just a very successful scientist, had a good reputation, could have still published a lot of papers. You know, wouldn't have maybe been in Nature and all that stuff, but it would have been solid papers. He could have been a very successful scientist just if he hadn't done the fraud, because he was incredibly knowledgeable of literature. He was in an incredible actual work ethic. You know, he just sort of had this ability to just spend hours upon hours on end just writing papers. He did work hard in the field when we were out there with him. And, you know, he was incredibly creative when coming up with ideas on how to, you know, design experiments and test for things. It's unfortunately at the end, sort of, he just sort of put his foot on the scale. And it was just baffling. You know, it was more just like this trying to climb the ladder faster than, you know, he would have normally, but he would eventually probably got up that ladder. He just, you know, would have taken him a decade longer, but that's,
yeah,
and how science is supposed to work. Yeah.
Well, I want to read, actually his website, I think Black Chateau Enterprises. I don't know. Maybe it's, well, so I just, this is a PR agency for, the Amber Menner, his first book in his series. I want to read, it's kind of funny. It's kind of not funny. It's like, I don't know if it would be so funny if you didn't know the context of who this guy is, but I'm going to read with the PR, blurb, which, I think he probably wrote a lot of it. Avoiding the usual expectations of fantasy by way of satire, humor, and a race of nefarious evil cats. The first in Jonathan Pruitt's The Shadows of the Monolith series, The Amber Menner, arrives this October from Spinner Loom Press. And I think that's his own self-publishing imprint. Having earned the title of the world's most infamous spider biologist, Pruitt has penned a grimdark fantasy looming the academic and scientific communities while also offering an immersive, diverse, and fast-paced story. Quote, I can be far more honest in fiction than I ever could have ever contemplated in nonfiction, Pruitt says. What exactly is Menher? Found across the globe, Menhers are mysterious, ancient, imposing monoliths that prove evidence of a civilization's existence. They're often the subject of superstition, just like magical institutions that make up this world. Whether they stand as pinnacles of grandeur and discovery or blemishes of political pestilence will be up to the reader, explains Pruitt. Readers visit a modern-day grimdark fairy tale where reality bends and twists with plenty of humor and profound insights. In writing The Amber Menner, Pruitt drew upon his many life experiences, from traversing the rugged landscapes of South Africa and Namibia to savoring the enchantment of Australia and Canada. Jonathan Pruitt's metamorphosis from a prodigious scientific mind into a fantasy author is a testament to reinvention, as he proves in The Amber Menner, The Shadows of the Monolith, Book 1. Okay, so it's available for a reading copy on NetGalley and for pre-order on Amazon as of the press release. That was, you know, the whole thing is kind of like a little weird. I do not condone, obviously, what he did as a scientist, but, you know, this is not a bitter guy. It seems like he's trying to figure something else out, and this is more honest to maybe his spirit of, like, you know, seeking glory and fame and the spotlight than as a scientist, where that should be secondary. But really, it was important to him. And so he cut a lot of corners. That's the way I'm going to say it, mildly. You know, that's that. I do wonder if maybe there is going to be a cat character based on you in there, Colin.
You know, I've kind of wanted to read the series to see if I can, like, identify people in his life that he talks about, and maybe myself or something in one of these characters. You know, it's honestly, like, it's probably a good book, because he used to be our Dungeons and Dragons, dungeon master. We used to play that because we were super nerds in graduate school. And he would just create these amazing fantasy worlds, from scratch, to lead us through the role play worlds,
RPGs,
Yeah, RPG. Well, I can't remember the name of it. Like, what's it called? The world you create in Dungeons and Dragons. I should know this.
Okay, I have no idea. I'm not that much of a nerd.
Yeah, he'd create the adventures. That's what I was looking for. Yeah, so it's probably a good book, but I don't know if I can give it a full endorsement.
Yeah, you condemn his science, but kind of curious about his fantastical fiction prowess, right?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe I'll check it out.
Well, let's pivot away from fantasy. So in 2018, you write this piece in Quillette. I think I read it, but it was kind of boring because, like, why is someone writing this? Talk about where that's coming from, because some of the listeners would be like, wait, why would Razib say something that rude? But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a lot of comments. Sometimes I go back and look at what people said, and everyone's just like, I was basically just nodding along for every sentence, because every part of the essay was nothing controversial. It was just the most basic biology you can imagine, basically, that biological sex is real. There's only two sexes. You know, people who identify as a one sex, as you know, sex that they're not, aren't really that sex. You know, just, you know, stable reality type stuff, things we've long discovered that have just suddenly become or became too taboo to say, that a lot of people didn't want to say, or they would just couch it in sort of this cryptic nonsense. So yeah, it was just a piece that, you know, sex is real and it matters that we acknowledge that it's real and sex isn't a spectrum. Intersex people are not a third sex, just basic stuff like that. But like, oh, still be compassionate to people who are having, you know, distress about their, you know, so-called gender identity or have gender dysphoria. You know, it was just a compassionate piece, but scientifically accurate piece, and argued that we don't need to throw out reality in order to, you know, have compassion for people who are going through certain types of, you know, mental distress.
Yeah, I mean, you're being very careful of mental distress. I know you've been attacked as a, I don't know, like calling for the genocide of trans people. I've just seen weird things. I think they wanted to they've canceled you multiple times, quote unquote, they, as in, you know, people like Kevin Bird, who a little bit more low profile now. There's new people, but, you know, there's always someone like that. Basically, I think they said you said something about social contagion, and they said that this was like genocidal or something. Turns out that I think a lot of people now uncontroversially accept the social contagion is happening, right?
Yes. I mean, it was pretty uncontroversial at the time. There's plenty of things that we call social contagion. It's not, you know, they tried to spin it as me saying that trans people were a virus or something like that, or, you know, it just ridiculous. But, you know, we've known of social contagions in the social sciences with certain things like anorexia and, you know, just all types of things like that, where it's, you know, it's something that's detrimental to you, but it still spreads, even though it can be harmful through like mimetic reasons. So, yeah.